Los Angeles, but I'm not actually going to read in an American accent, you'll be relieved to hear. It's a love story for people who hate love stories. Belle has broken up with her boyfriend Dan in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and he's driven off and got into a car crash and died. And Belle becomes convinced that he's actually possessing her. So on November the 1st, which is the eve of the Day of the Dead, Mexican Day of the Dead, her boss Turner tricks her into attending a seance, which freaks her out. Belle wrenches open the front door and tumbles down the wooden steps from the porch onto the path. She looks up and down the street, uncertain which direction to take. Turner and Jack Ketch shout her name. The others are starting to follow her, yelling, "Stop!" It's the scene from Frankenstein, with villagers pursuing the monster carrying pitchforks and flaming torches. Except this crowd are waving glasses of white wine and sticks of French bread. "Belle, wait for me," shouts Turner again, but she doesn't trust him now. How can she face him at work after what's just happened? She flings herself down the steep hill, keeping to the middle of the street. She hasn't been to Angelino Heights for years. Halloween jack-o'-lanterns adorn the front porches of restored East Lake Victorian houses. The wind picks up piles of dry leaves and sets them dancing down the street. Los Angeles is spread out below like an illuminated emerald city. In spite of her panic and racing heart, or perhaps because of it, she feels exhilarated and truly alive for the first time in weeks. A dark figure hunched over the handlebars of a bicycle shoots out of a side street. Her downhill momentum carries her directly into its path. She stumbles, pitching forward. The figure brakes hard, stopping inches from her head. "What the fuck, lady?" he yells at her. Belle kneels on the asphalt, breathing hard, eyes squeezed shut. She hears the cyclist lay down his bike. "Are you hurt? For real? Say something." She recognizes his voice but can't place it. She opens her eyes, turning her head to focus on the pale face and wide mouth with its gold tooth glinting in the streetlight. The man is in his early 20s. He has a greased pompadour of blue-black hair and wears a ripped t-shirt with rockabilly voodoo on it, scuffed black leather biker jacket and drainpipe jeans. Jesus, it's Psycho Billy. "Belle, what the fuck? You trying to get yourself killed?" He takes her hand and pulls her to her feet. "Trying to join the boyfriend?" "It isn't like that," she says. "Pills and a quart of Jim Beam. If I ever want to off myself, that'll be my ticket out of here." He dusts her down. She's shivering. Her knees are bleeding and scraped. "Where's your coat, princess?" She looks away from his gaze, doesn't want to explain what happened back there on West Edgware Road. "Take this." He shrugs off his jacket and drapes it over her shoulders. He laughs. Her hair is awry and her makeup is probably smudged all over her face. "I never thought I'd see Miss Star looking so trashed. Must have been some night." He picks up the bike, inspecting it for dings and dents. "Climb aboard. I'll give you a ride home." She shakes her head. "I don't want to go home." "So where do you want to go? I'm freezing my butt off here." Belle doesn't want to be on her own. "Somewhere hot, crowded, and noisy." He grins, spits on his hands, and rubs them together. "I know just the place." The wind rushes past her face, whipping strands of hair up and around her head like little darts of flame. Everything smells wonderful and fresh as they drop down towards Echo Park. The air is piney, wood smoky, earthy. The city looks different too, strange and lovely. She has the sensation of moving through it and being connected to it in a way that she isn't when she's driving. She's part of the story, not witnessing it drift past the windshield. Like she's an actor in the movie, not sitting in a movie theater watching it projected in front of her. She shouts out in excitement. "Having fun, princess?" Psycho Billy stands astride the top tube, pedaling like a demon. "You must be freezing," she says. She sits on the saddle, arms around his waist. "I'm a guy. We don't feel the cold." He says it with an exaggerated chattering of his teeth, and she laughs. "Where's Dan now? Is he watching this little scene?" She can't feel him near, only Psycho Billy. He's got "Smoke 'em if you've got 'em" tattooed on his arm. "What's that?" she asks him. "Do what you want if you've got the means. It's kind of my philosophy of life," you might say. It must be so simple if you're Psycho Billy. Live for the moment, no guilt. "I grew up around here, near Elysian Park," she says, as they pass Amy Simple McPherson's Angelus Temple. "Where are you taking me?" "Zombie night at Club Zephyr. We're going to celebrate the Day of the Dead." Psycho Billy is a bike messenger. He picks up and delivers small packages from companies like Bell's and takes them all over the city. Since the gas crisis, Turner has been an enthusiastic early adopter of this eco-friendly service. Bell has never seen Psycho Billy in civvies before. He wears Lycra cycling gear when he's working, which always looks a little strange with a pompadour. He's called Psycho Billy because he's a rockabilly rebel, a little bit punk and, well, a little bit psycho. He's fit and lean from all the cycling, but his skin is grey and there are dark circles under his eyes, a testament to his after-hours life. They turn off Glendale Boulevard. In a dark, empty street, Psycho Billy skids to a halt and they wobble onto the sidewalk. Bell is tipped off the saddle. "I've lost my purse. I don't have any money. How am I going to get home?" All the excitement has now drained away, leaving her exhausted and scared. "Worry about that later." He padlocks the bike to a streetlight. "Now we're going to party." They stop outside a darkened store. He knocks a complicated rat-a-tat-tat, a code of sorts, on the grimy plate glass window. "Hey, Dolly, I've got a delivery," he shouts. A weak blue aquarium light illuminates the store. A woman peers at them through the door. She nods in recognition and unbolts it. "Hiya, Wanda. This is Belle." The woman is a glamazon with jet black Betty Page hairdo, close cropped bangs on her forehead and luscious curls falling to her shoulders. Wanda has fierce crimson lips and huge gold birdcage earrings. She's wearing a flouncy pin-up style bathing suit. Her shoes have lucite wedges with goldfish swimming inside them. "Hey love, where have you been?" She kisses Psycho Billy, using her thumb to wipe away the smudge of lipstick she's left on his cheek. "Come on in, Belle." She looks at Belle's chaotic state. "You look like you could use a drink." The store is a taxidermist studio. Rows of dead things are stacked in dusty towers of display cases, staring forlornly out. Butterflies, bugs, and beetles pinned in precise multiples. But as she considers them more carefully, the creatures seem suspended in a state between life and death, neither one nor fully the other. Chipmunks scamper over tree trunks and chase each other down burrows. Mountain lion, deer, and alligator heads mounted on wooden shields follow Belle with beady glass eyes as she walks past. A huge Kodiak bear rears up, stuffed salmon in its paws, making her jump when she bumps into it in a dark corner of the room. A bald eagle with outstretched wings is suspended from the roof as if about to soar up into the night sky. "Is any of this legal?" she whispers to Psycho Billy. "Oh, sure," replies Wanda with a wink. "It's all done for museums and zoos. Now, are you here to party or check our credentials?" She opens a door at the back of the studio and a blast of heat, noise and music billows up the staircase from the basement. They descend into the underworld. The club is a labyrinth with red walls and low ceilings painted black. In one room, a small stage is crowded with gypsy musicians, their wailing violins, accordions and martial brass rhythms overlaying Balkan beats. The audience is dancing ecstatically in the tiny space. Black and white zombie movies are projected onto the walls. Psycho Billy drags Belle through the crowd to another room where a rockabilly trio is playing drums, stand-up bass and hollow body guitar. He dances maniacally and uncontrollably. He tries to get Belle to dance with him, but she isn't interested. He won't take no for an answer. As he twirls her around, she falters and stops, hand flying to her face, eyes widening in alarm. "What is it? Are you sick?" he shouts above the noise. She shakes her head slowly, unable to tell him what's wrong. She points to the entrance. "There's nothing there. What did you see?" Belle's knees buckle. Psycho Billy catches and steadies her before she slides to the floor, his arms around her waist. Do you need some air? I saw him, Dan. He was watching us dance. Psycho Billy looks around the room. Do you want to go after him? What is this place? She's torn between wanting to find Dan and being terrified that she will. I've seen stranger things here than a dead man, but that may have been the angel dust, he says. I have to find him. There's a reason he's here. What time is it? Midnight. Happy Dia de los Muertos, princess. Dan is in the bar watching a movie. Belle sits down next to him on the couch. He slides his arm around her shoulder without taking his eyes from the screen. What are you watching? She asks. Seventh Victim. I love this movie. She can smell Cuban cigars and coffee, his special blend with cardamom and star anise, as she lays her head on his chest. Take me with you, Red, he says. I've had enough of this place. I'm neither dead or alive. How did you know I'd be here tonight? He shrugs. Did you think Psycho Billy turning up was a coincidence? I found you here. You didn't come looking for me. Dan yawns and stretches as the movie finishes. He leans in and kisses her. She's overwhelmed by the physicality of this wraith, this impermanent spirit, the warmth, the taste of him. How can it all be conjured up by her imagination? What if I stay here with you instead? She asks, looking into his fathomless black eyes. When he was alive, she always kept him at a distance. You don't know what you're offering. He brushes her cheek with the back of his hand. You go first. I'll be following. But there's one thing you have to promise me. She'll promise him anything now. Don't look back. Whatever happens, don't look back. She laughs. You're kidding me, right? But he isn't laughing. Go ahead. Wait for me in the parking lot. Promise me, Red. I promise, no looking back. How hard can that be? She walks through the club and people step aside, staring curiously at her as if she's a celebrity. She's hot and clammy, fighting the desperate urge to turn around and see if Dan is following her. Passing an alcove with an illuminated Dia de los Muertos shrine, on an impulse she can't explain, she takes a sugar skull, a basket of marigold flowers, and a candle in a glass. What will it mean if Dan leaves with her? That they get another chance together? That he's coming back from the dead for another shot at life? Is this what she really wants? Psycho Billy is waiting outside the club, smoking a cigarette. He's holding a woman's coat, green suede with a fur collar. Where did you get that? She asks, as he holds it out for her to put on. The coat check girl was powdering her nose. I figured you'd need it where we're going. How are we getting there? She asks, without the faintest idea where it is they are going. I'll boost us a ride. Just get ready to hop in. He disappears into the parking lot. In a couple of minutes, she hears the low, throaty roar of a muscle car, and he pulls up in a sage green 72 Barracuda. Oh, my God. It's Dan's car. How can that be? The cops said it was completely wrecked. It's even got the little skeleton guitar player hanging from the rearview mirror. Psycho Billy leans across to open the door. Come on, let's go. But we have to wait for Dan, she tells him, and reflexively turns back to the taxidermy store. As she does so, Psycho Billy yells a warning, don't look back, but it's too late. She sees Dan at the open door. He's shaking his head, looking sad and weary, and then he's gone. What have I done? She cries. But before she can run back to the store, Psycho Billy grabs her arm and drags her into the car. He guns the engine and they take off into the dawn. It's unsettling to return to Hollywood Forever Cemetery after all that's happened. She isn't sure she should even be doing this if it will upset Dan's family next time they come to discover the shrine she's going to leave. She goes to the office to ask directions to the grave. It's tucked away in a corner in the Garden of Shalom. Nearby, in the Hall of Solomon, is Bugsy Siegel's crypt, where gamblers leave pennies to bring them luck before a trip to Vegas. She hadn't expected Dan would be in a family plot. Headstones mark the graves of his father, Saul, and brother, Jacob, but also his grandparents, David and Seema. She's suddenly horrified at the idea that she's going to be besieged by hordes of Luriers and Rosenbergs, all expecting to be fed and entertained and making disparaging remarks about her. Seriously, Daniel, is that Shiksa the best you can do? Disconcertingly, Dan's grave still looks freshly dug. There's no headstone yet. His sister Opal told her that a year and a day after the funeral, a headstone would be consecrated. Vases of fresh lilies and tuberoses are evidence that his mother has visited in the past few days. Belle kneels in front of the grave and closes her eyes. She hadn't seen Dan's body after the accident, touched his waxy grey flesh, or kissed his cold cheek. She hadn't seen that whatever animated him had switched off like a light. That's what it took for her to accept that her mother was dead, when what remained resembled only a marble figure from a medieval tomb. She hadn't mourned him and wept for him at his funeral, or listened to those who knew him give the eulogies, or thrown a handful of dirt on his coffin. Maybe that was why she was imagining that he was still here, because she hadn't really, properly, said goodbye. It's still early, and the cemetery is almost empty. There aren't many Latino graves here. Most of the newer headstones bear Armenian and Russian names. Elsewhere, though, in East LA, whole families will be gathering with candles and picnics to do what she's doing. She sets out the Dia de los Muertos offerings and a pack of Native Spirit organic cigarettes she finds in the coat pocket before lighting the votive candle. I'm so sorry I let you down back there, that I broke my promise to you, but I'm so confused. I know you weren't really there in the Zephyr, but if you want to come now and talk to me, it's okay. It's permitted on this day and in this place. But Dan doesn't reply. She hears the wind in the branches of the pine trees and the hum of traffic on Santa Monica Boulevard. A woman jogs by in shorts and sneakers, listening to an iPod. If you come to me here, it means I'm not going crazy. It doesn't mean there really is an afterlife, though, does it? You're just a restless spirit caught between two worlds. She stands up, shaking out her legs. She isn't sure if Dan is playing hard to get or how long she should wait. If you don't come, it means you've really gone. You're not hanging around anymore in a supernatural waiting room. Either you've done what you needed and given me your message, or you really were just a projection of my guilt. Grief. The votive candle flickers in the wind. She rearranges the offerings once more, adding the skeleton figure from Dan's car. I'm going now. I'll miss you, but I'm glad you've decided to move on. As she walks slowly back to the car, she takes one last look at the decorated grave. Too bad, but we had some fun. Psycho Billy is standing by the car. He's managed to rustle up coffee and donuts from somewhere. But the car isn't Dan's Barracuda, after all, just some unwashed, anonymous sedan. Come on, Princess, got to take this back before it's missed. I'll drop you off at your house first. Goodbye, Dan. I really mean it. Goodbye. And yet, somehow, she knows it isn't over yet.